Our final speaker is Professor Hollis from Rice University. Her title, or various titles actually, are Evidence of Multidisciplinary Work. Professor in Electrical and Computer Engineering, Professor of Biomedical Engineering, Chemistry, Physics and Astronomy, and she's the Director of the Laboratory for Nanophotonics. Rice University, where she is, has quite a reputation for leadership in nanophotonics, in no small part due to her work and her leadership. Naomi.
Thank you very much. Okay, great. So, I certainly hope that, well, I want to thank you all for coming, of course, and I certainly hope that you have captured, by inference, that you get the idea that we're all very excited about this field. And I'm going to give you a specific example. I'm going to sort of take you on a bit of a voyage of discovery and of application from our own work that shows an example for really just how powerful this whole idea of nanomedicine can be. But first, I want to start us off at the beginning. So what is nanomedicine and where did it come from? Did it come from the great universities and the East Coast or California or the universe or Europe? Actually not. You know, I think we all know that nanomedicine came from Hollywood. It actually came from this wonderful movie from, gosh, I guess about 30 years ago, where we envisioned these tiny little medical staff persons who enter, enter the bloodstream in vehicles, and then they use directed energy to eradicate certain bad things from the human body. I think in this case, this is some sort of cardiovascular application. Excuse me. So that's the original vision. And what's so ironic about this is, of course, that's silly. But the truth is that we are on that same fantastic voyage, but that voyage is actually reality. And so we can take precisely this same direction, but we have different tools that make it simpler and that make it more practical and that will ultimately make it realizable. So rather than shrinking down medical staff and sending them through the body, we send something much simpler through the body. And in fact, we send this nanoparticle, and I'm going to tell you about this nanoparticle. Okay, it's a very simple structure, and it looks remarkably like a malted milk ball. Okay, it's got a core, and then it's got this shell, and in fact, it's exactly 200,000 times smaller than a malted milk ball. But instead of a chocolate layer, it has a gold layer, and instead of that crunchy core, whatever that stuff is, and all I know is it's good, we have a glass core. So this combination of a glass bead surrounded precisely by a gold core that has a precise thickness has a remarkable property in optics, and it has led us now to some very interesting applications that I'll tell you about. So what we're doing with this nanoparticle, even though it's so very small, we're actually using it to manipulate light. So we're taking optical components, these conventional things like the ones we wear on our eyes or that drive telecommunications industry, like optical fibers, and we're shrinking them to much, much smaller dimensions, smaller than a wavelength of light, but still they're very powerful, and we're able to use them to manipulate light in specific ways that we design. Now the secret of these particles, the secret of their optical properties, has to do with the properties of gold. We all know what gold looks like. Gold looks gold, but not at the nanoscale. Okay? Gold at the nanoscale has remarkably different properties. In fact, this beautiful red goblet here, which was made during the Roman times and is actually found in the British Museum, is made from essentially glass in which tiny gold nanoparticles were embedded. It was invented by the alchemists. They didn't quite know what it was, but they did know that it gave rise to this beautiful red color because it absorbed green light. So it's not gold at all. It actually now is this beautiful red color. And this is actually the material that is used in all the beautiful stained glass windows in Europe, and it's known as ruby glass. Some of you might have goblets made of ruby glass in your home. Well, about 10 years ago in my laboratory, we began to realize that instead of making solid nanospheres of gold, if we instead made our spheres in this malted milk ball shape that I showed you a moment ago, and if we could control those dimensions, that had a really remarkable property. Instead of absorbing one particular color of light, green light, we could, by varying the dimensions of that little structure, we could actually absorb whatever wavelength of light we wanted, whatever color of light we wanted, all the colors we could see. and then even some colors that we can't see. And the colors we can't see, it turns out, are colors where a lot of technology and business gets done. And so that's opened the door to a lot of interesting technologies. And so we have, if we sort of look across this very, very broad spectrum, a spectral range for where we can make all the different colors that we can make our nanoparticles, we find that it spans a lot of different technologies, things as from as different as invisible light cosmetics, for example, to chemical biosensing, military applications where we want to be accessing regions of the spectrum where the eye can't see. And it turns out that nanomedicine is right in the center of that very broad spectrum. In the region of light, just a little bit to the red of the red wavelengths that your eye can see. Now, what's special about that? Those wavelengths are called the near infrared. And what's special about them is that this is something that the bioengineers call the water window. It's literally a window into the body. And light can penetrate, light of those wavelengths can penetrate into the body tens of centimeters. So literally, we look like, in those wavelengths, we look kind of like those, you see those medical dolls that are transparent on the outside and you see all the organs inside? Well, at those wavelengths, that's what we look like. And so we have a window, we have an optical penetration into the body. And now we have our particles that we can design them so that they very strongly either absorb light or scatter light precisely at those wavelengths where we are most transparent. So now we have an optical tool that we have tailored to being able to use specifically for applications within the human body. And so of all these wavelengths that I showed you, it's actually one of the easiest set of wavelengths, this water window that allows access to human use. This water window is one of the easiest regimes for us to make our nanoparticles. And we're literally, so to make these structures, we're literally doing this by design. We often think of nanotechnology as discovery. It's discovery, but once you discover how it works, you can reduce it to engineering practice pretty easily. So we literally, if we want a nanoparticle of a certain size, that absorbs light of a certain color, we first calculate what's the size of that particle, the size of the core and the shell layers of that molten milk ball. We design it first, we go fabricate the nanoparticle, we make sure that it has the right properties, absorbs the light we want for that particular property, and then we're able to use it in application. So we have a complete circle for what this nanoparticle can do, and this is what they look like. This is real particles, and they have their optical properties correspond precisely to what they do. So maybe can we play this? Okay. So this is a light pulse hitting a nanoshell. Now I'm just showing a slice of a nanoshell. But this is a slow motion of a light pulse hitting a nanoshell. Now this pulse is gone. Okay. This pulse is leaving the district. But what we have is the way this nanoparticle has captured light and is literally focusing the light waves around itself on that along that shell structure. So it's that gold shell that's doing all the business. Okay, it's captured light and focused light around itself. What does it do with all that light energy? It turns out it can either redirect that, or more importantly, it can use that, like it can convert the light to heat and use the photothermal properties in therapeutic applications. So we love this simulation. We call this the one that we did for the generals. Okay, so this is literally a nano lens. Okay, this is a tiny structure, smaller than a wavelength of light, too small to see, but what it does exactly what you saw there. It captures light and focuses the light around itself. So it captures light from a region that's larger than its physical size, and we can use that light energy that it captures for whatever application that we desire. We can use it for diagnostics. We can place it in a certain part of the body and have it report back as scattered light for contrast, for example. But maybe more importantly, we can use it actively as a therapeutic in the case of cancer. And these two ideas go together. This is an interesting thing about nanomedicine. With new tools, you can do things in fundamentally new ways. So rather than having diagnostics over here, therapeutics over there, we see more and more this idea that these two concepts can be combined. Okay, and so this is a powerful idea. It's also obviously a cost reductive idea, and it's a time saving idea. And it's a way in which it will certainly improve patients' quality of life. So what am I talking about here? Let's just say I have there's a tumor, and if I can figure out how to get my nanoshells to the tumor site, then I can send in near-infrared light, because these particles will scatter or absorb the near-infrared light, and they might scatter back and send me some information to tell me whether or not that tumor is benign or malignant. But also, I can just turn up the laser power, and these particles will absorb light, convert the light to heat at their local location within the tumor, raise the temperature of the cancer cells, and kill them, okay? and induce remission of the tumor at a remarkably high high rate of effectiveness. And so this is the original proof of concept experiment for when we demonstrated this. We just had cancer cells. These are breast cancer cells that are sitting in a dish, and we put our nanoparticles on the cancer cells. These nanoparticles are completely non-toxic. They're made of gold, and so their body doesn't even recognize that there's a foreign agent in the body. This is actually not in the body, this is in a dish, but in general these are highly non-toxic, the body does not recognize them. And so if they interact with cells, they have no harm. They can be inside a cell, they don't cause no harm whatsoever. We could also shine near-infrared light on those cells, and the near-infrared light, as I told you, in those specific wavelengths, passes right through cells, right through tissue, as if it were transparent. But if we combine the two, if we put the nanoshells on the cells, and then we shine light, the nanoshells do exactly what I described with this nanolensing effect. They capture light. They focus the light around themselves, and they heat their local surroundings. And so in this region here, so this is nanoshells with near-infrared light. This is nanoshells in the dark. I'm sorry, cells, excuse me, breast cancer cells with irradiated with near-infrared light, breast cancer cells with nanoshells on top of them, and now we have breast cancer cells with nanoshells on them with near-infrared light irradiating, and we have this dark region where there are no living cells. There's lots of cells, but there are no living cells, living metabolizing cells. So we see we have a very effective way of inducing, in a very clean and precise way, cell death for the cells that we would like to destroy. And so we can look at how, so we can go from this model of just treating cells to thinking about how we could treat people with this. How can we treat, for example, tumors, intact tumors? And it turns out that tumors have this remarkable property where they will actually take up nanoparticles through the bloodstream. So let's say you just inject nanoparticles into the bloodstream. They circulate through the bloodstream, and they will be taken up naturally into a tumor. How does this happen? This happens because tumors grow very fast. Okay? They grow very fast, and so they grow blood vessels very, very rapidly to feed this rapid growth. But the blood vessels that they're growing at this very rapid rate, they grow in a very sloppy way, and they have defects and holes, and so particles that flow through the bloodstream and happen to flow into the location of a tumor will get stuck there because of all the defects in the tumor blood vessels. It's called the tumor vasculature. And so we can see a huge difference if we just let nanoshells circulate in a tumor, and we can just see just by the scattered light that there's a huge accumulation relative to no accumulation in normal tissue. And so we can extend this, so there's the two contrasts, and so we can extend these directly to animal studies. So the animal studies are very important because they show exactly how people would be treated, okay? And so this is exactly exactly analogous to human use. So we have mice where tumors are grown on the flanks of mice. Nanoshells are delivered not to the tumor, but into the tail veins. So they circulate through the bloodstream of the mouse, and over several hours, they gather into the tumor site. And after waiting several hours, we then come with a very simple laser, again, at those special wavelengths, so it passes through the skin very easily and is absorbed not by the cells, but by the nanoparticles. They'll absorb the light, and we irradiate only for 3 minutes, a simple tabletop laser for 3 minute irradiation after having waited 6 hours. And then we measure the tumor mass. We've seen that the temperature of the tumor is increased by the heating of the nanoparticles. And then we watch the tumor size for the next 60 days. So in the ensuing 60 days, something quite remarkable happens. On day zero, we have a tumor that's measurable for the mice that are treated, the control group that isn't treated, and then this third group that's treated just with the laser but without the nanoparticles. Okay? And then by day 10, we see a dramatic difference in the tumor size. By day 10, we find that the tumor, the mice that have been treated have no measurable tumor. And we also find that the two control groups that were either untreated or treated without nanoparticles have a much, much larger tumor mass. In fact, if we follow this test out for the complete time of treatment, which is 2 months, 60 days, we find that by the end of the third week, all of the mice that were in the control groups all had to be sacrificed because their tumors had grown beyond a certain size. We also see that all of the NanoShell-treated mice were tumor-free at that point and continued to be tumor-free for the end of the study, which was 60 days. And in fact, this was a long-term survivability study. The lifespan of a laboratory mouse is about 2 years, and they all, in fact, lived out their entire lifespan for following treatment. And so it's one thing to tell you the story. It's another thing to show you exactly what this looks like. And so this is this was done by a group at UT Southwest Medical Center, which followed exactly the same procedure. Now, here's a tumor on the day of treatment. This is prostate cancer, a subcutaneous tumor. And then by day 10, we find that this tumor is gone. And there's a little bit of a mark here on day 10, and actually by about day 13, that's a little very minor scar that sloughs off. And so you actually don't have a mark after about 2 weeks. And so this work started, the first time we published this work actually was back in 2003. And the first animal study was published in 2004. We started a company called NanoSpectra Biosciences, which is pursuing this and now currently has been pursuing this in clinical trials. So this is in people. It's been in people since January 2008. And at least in animals, we see that this type of very simple treatment. Now notice, no drugs, heat and light. It's a very simple idea. Okay? This can be generalized to many, many types of cancers, and it has been demonstrated successfully in a variety of different cancers in animal models. And again, absolutely no evidence of toxicity. There were 5 years worth of toxicity studies that had to go into being able to go to the FDA and say, can we deliver this to the clinic? And those were successful. All the data was successful. So the clinical trials have been underway since 2008. And so this is precisely, now I just showed you the mouse study, and you'll see a tremendous similarity between this in this video of that shows how we would now treat a human. This is now a treatment of head and neck cancer. And so this shows the bloodstream, and this shows the nanoparticles flowing through the bloodstream, and you see these little defects in the vasculature and the nanoparticles streaming into the defects, and they accumulate in the tumor mass. And following the few hours that it takes for them to collect into the tumor mass, then one can directly deliver light into this region. In this case, we're using a fiber optic probe, so that the body is either accessible through the skin or virtually all organs are accessible using fiber optics. And so a fiber optic is inserted, and the nanoparticles absorb the light and heat up, and they destroy the cancer. So this work has now, so this was a video that was developed at our company. And this work has gone from head and neck cancer, is now being extended to prostate cancer this year and starting in 2010. So I think this is really a concrete example of the promise of nanomedicine. We can really think about a completely different paradigm, a drug-free paradigm. I've been to the National Cancer Institute and told a room full of MDs about this treatment. And after my talk, first hand went up and said, excuse me, it's kind of early. Where did you say the drug went? And I said, no drug. And then the second hand went up and said, I'm sorry, what happens to the drug after a treatment? It's like, no drug. And there's a profound difference from what we're used to. We can't really fathom this idea that we're not coupling into the pharmaceutical industry to provide a treatment for cancer. And we also, and so this treatment, as I showed you, is useful for tumors, but this can also be extended to early stage using antibodies, and also, in particular, to late stage metastatic disease. People don't die from breast cancer. They die from brain metastases. And so just in the last week, we've seen some beautiful data where actually people have now used nanoshells and targeted brain metastases. Are one of some of our collaborators in Indiana. And so this is a wonderful, powerful treatment, but it has a wonderful, also a human aspect to this that's important to think about. We're so used to thinking about medicine, medical solutions, chemotherapy, radiation therapy for cancer, and we don't think of, we worry about survivability as well we should, but we don't think about the human factors, the human cost. We assume that the cure must be at least as bad as the disease, if not worse. And wouldn't it be so nice if we could move from that paradigm by developing these effective therapeutics, move from a paradigm where we start to worry about the quality of life of our patients and their families in the treatment of this disease. And not to mention, if we're decoupling ourselves from the pharmaceutical industry and their infrastructure, then aspects of cost effectiveness now have a completely different picture, because the amount of dollars that goes into development is much reduced. So this is a technology developed in my laboratory, starting in my laboratory at Rice. I'm the inventor of the nanoparticle. They're not quantum dots, they're nanoshells, by the way. And this is my collaborator, Jennifer West, and we have this funny thing called the Art Car Parade in Houston. Some of you have been to Houston, and we have this funky parade, and so some people at Rice decided to make a car and cover it with gold-covered ping-pong balls, like nanoshells. So Jennifer and I, this idea and several more all came from one cup of coffee conversation that Jennifer and I had about, here's my nanoparticle, what can we do with it? Let's think about some things. And within 10 minutes, we had the ideas for a company, and we had ideas for 3 patents, and everything flowed from that idea. So with that, I certainly hope that you've been able to couple to a lot of the excitement that all of us have about the opportunities for optics in nanomedicine and how these are truly revolutionary opportunities. Thank you.